And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on Rumble and X, courtesy of Starlink. There has been a major AT&T outage in the northern half of New Hanover County now, going on 4 days. And fortunately, thanks to a backup Starlink mini unit, we are back live this morning. Appreciate you spending some time with us here. Of course, don't forget you can check out the show and take it with you 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. Just search for The Nick Craig Show wherever you'll get your shows and subscribe, and you'll get that new show delivered each and every weekday morning. Well, hopefully you had a great weekend, a night, pretty nice one weather-wise across southeastern North Carolina. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Well, we've got a busy day slated here across the country. We start in Washington, D.C. this morning, where the Federal Court of Appeals is set to hear oral arguments in a high-profile deportation suit, which involves Venezuelan nationals. This, of course, was the big story last weekend, as you had a federal district judge. We spent a lot of time on this. A federal district judge that deemed it was under his purview to restrict the President of the United States from using a 1798 wartime law to deport individuals to Venezuela. Well, the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit will hear those oral arguments this morning as to whether a lower court can properly address the administration's effort. The administration has asked for a stay pending appeal shortly after an initial March the 15th order was issued, calling it a massive unauthorized imprisonment on executive authority to remove dangerous aliens who pose threats to the American people. The Trump administration is attempting a 1798 wartime authority to deport Venezuelan nationals, including members of the very dangerous Tren de Aragua street gang in Venezuela. Last week, an Obama-appointed D.C. judge known as James Boasberg issued an order to immediately halt any planned deportations of Venezuelan nationals to El Salvador. A plane carrying hundreds of immigrants, including those of Venezuelan nationality, were removed under the law and arrived in El Salvador hours after the court order. Boasberg held a Monday evening fact-finding hearing, that was last week, where he ordered the Trump administration to submit more information on the flights, including information on how the planes departed the United States that were carrying any people who were deported solely on the basis of that proclamation. He also asked how many individuals were on each plane, where the planes landed, and which times each plane took off from the United States and from where. Boasberg imposed a Tuesday noon deadline last week for the administration to submit that information and also ordered the parties appear in court again on Friday. In a reply briefly submitted to the D.C. Circuit on Wednesday, the administration said, quote, "The district court is continuing to attempt to pry sensitive information from the government. All of the district court orders should be stayed, and the executive branch, standing as a co-equal branch of government, should be respected." The Trump administration called the additional requests intrusive inquiries that could hamper negotiations in the future. The federal government repeatedly failed to comply with the order to submit additional information, citing national security issues. Judge Boasberg then said that the government could submit the information under seal by Thursday. In a Thursday evening order, Boasberg slammed the administration after it missed his deadline, saying that it, quote, would again evade its obligations to submit the requested information. Judge Boasberg wrote in an order that the government had instead sent a 6-paragraph declaration from a regional ICE director in Texas, which notified the court that the cabinet secretaries are actively considering whether to invoke State Secrets Act privilege over the facts requested by the court order. Boasberg called the submission woefully insufficient. Judges Karen Henderson, Patricia Mellett, and Justin Walker will preside over the oral arguments that will be taking place today in Washington, D.C. Two of those three judges were nominated by Republican presidents, with Henderson being appointed by George W. Bush in the 1990s and Justin Walker being appointed by Trump in 2020. The other judge on the panel, Patricia Millett, was appointed by Barack Obama in 2013. So, as I mentioned to you, and we talked about it in great detail last week, this was going to come to a head sooner rather than later. This situation that is unfolding with unelected, bureaucratic district court judges pretending that they have the authority to oversee what the administration is doing. For these entities to pretend that they, solely these unelected district court judges, have the federal authority to block the executive branch in their actions, things that, you know, things like national defense, which are solely an authority of the executive branch, is going to play out in big time this morning. At least I suspect that that's what's going to happen. And you know, the discussion is really unfolded over the last, I guess we'll say, 7 days at this point. It, you know, last Sunday was when this order came down from Judge Boasberg, the federal district judge. And over the entirety of last week, you saw a constant back and forth between the administration, between individuals. We played some clips from Newt Gingrich, Mark Levin, other folks who I have an incredible amount of respect for, who individuals who tend to have a pretty good pulse on how some of these things are likely to play out. And they seem pretty concise in their thoughts that these judges don't have this authority. And that's really, I think, what one of the things that is going to come out, not necessarily through this ruling or not through these oral arguments, but as this continues to take place. Because as I'll remind you, this deportation story is just one of many that are being discussed in regards to these federal district judges. Right? This is just one of the small examples of the massive amount of executive orders that have come out of this administration that judges have unilaterally blocked. And they're not blocking it through full hearings. I'll remind you of that once again. They are blocking this through temporary stays through the court system, without hearing the merits of the case, without any court findings on how to rule. These judges are just unilaterally waving a wand and wiping away the executive action of the president. And, you know, this one more than anything else, when you look at national security, when you look at invoking this act from the late 1700s, this is the sole authority of the executive branch, as is a vast majority of immigration. This stuff starts and ends in the executive branch, or as the administration said, a co-equal branch of government, which in fact it is. You know, we have a system of checks and balances, and we should have a system of checks and balances. But the important thing, and I'll bring this to your attention, checks and balances only work if you have an unbiased, nonpartisan judicial system. Checks and balances only work if you have an impartial judiciary branch. And when all of the sudden you start finding out that that judicial branch isn't maybe playing in the middle of the road, maybe you find out that that judicial branch is swaying pretty heavily to one side of the political aisle or another, then your system of checks and balances starts to disintegrate pretty rapidly. The only way it works is with impartial judges. The only way it works is if political blinders are taken off and judges rule on the merits of whatever's in front of them. Regardless of the administration, regardless of the political party, regardless of who they were appointed by, we have seen, and this is not just something over the last few weeks, this has been a concern that has been growing for the last couple, really for probably over the last decade or so, maybe a little bit more, across the country. The erosion of our judicial system, not the system itself, but their ability to be impartial. Where you now have judges that act as hyper-partisans on both sides of the political aisle. That's a serious problem. That is an issue that we as a nation, we as a society, especially us as individuals that follow politics very closely and are hyper involved on in what goes on either at the local level, the state level, the federal or national level, however, wherever you really hone in on your political information. This is a major, major issue that the country is facing. And what do you do when you've got partisan hack judges that do not want to act in an impartial manner? What do you do when you have judges that are acting in a hyper-partisan manner? How does the system of checks and balances work with that? I will contend to you, I don't think it does. Checks and balances only work if everybody, at least the individuals ruling on it, the judicial side of this, the judicial branch, is willing to look at an issue without a political lens. It only works if they're willing to say, irregardless of who appointed me, whether it be Joe Biden, Trump, Barack Obama, George Bush, Bill Clinton, whoever appointed me, looking using some of our recent presidents, if I'm willing to look at this issue in a true bipartisan manner, if I'm going to look at this situation, if I'm going to look at this legal challenge through the lens of what is written down in law, what is enshrined in our Constitution. That's how checks and balances work. That's the only way that they work. If you get rid of that and you start ruling on cases based on political party, if you start ruling on cases that are bad for your political party or helpful to your political party, that creates a major, major problem. And that is the issue that we are seeing right now unfolding in Washington, D.C. These decisions are coming down from far-left progressive activist judges, which all of these challenges of executive orders have come from far-left partisan groups that have decided they are going to be the ones that take the administration to task. They are going to be the ones that come up with their issue, challenge the executive order, and shop it around the district court system until they can get it in front of a friendly judge. How do they know that they're going to get it in front of a friendly judge? Well, they are using the same partisan nonsense that these judges are. And they are using what they have deemed to be hyper-partisan judges based on their actions to get this stuff done. That's exactly what they're doing. It's not a secret. It's not something that they're hiding from the American people. They're doing it in plain sight. They have no shame in what they're doing at all. And, you know, just looking at the merits of this issue, I caught a very interesting clip on CNN. This was over the weekend talking about these deportations, right? Let's just set aside the court challenge for a second. Let's look at the politics behind what's going on. You had Trump, who was successful in the November election last year, who ran a vast majority of his campaign on illegal immigration. When you looked at political polling, whether it was a local poll, like the ones over at CarolinaJournal.com, for example, great polls over there throughout the entire election cycle, whether they were national polls, swing state polls, wherever, you saw that immigration was one of the top issues for American voters. And in a very smart political decision, the Trump campaign, reading the tea leaves, looking at the numbers, looking at the polling, said, this is a major issue for the American people. We need to ratchet up our messaging on immigration. We need to lay forth an argument to the American people why we, our administration, will be better at dealing with this problem than the last. That's blatantly obvious. The Trump administration used the data available and decided to craft a very concise and succinct message about how to deal with immigration. Trump is following through on that campaign promise and is being stopped by hack partisan judges. So I'll take you to CNN this weekend, a new poll that shows that a majority of Americans actually favor deportation. Take a listen to this.
63%, according to the latest Fox News poll, say that they favor deporting those immigrants. So that's a pretty high number. Can you square that with what we just heard from Priscilla's reporting?
Yeah, I think that obviously the president has kind of blanketed the airwaves with saying that all of these people deported are criminals. And given the fact that we reporters like Priscilla, we have very limited information to who exactly has been deported. The government has not handed over names. I know CBS got a hold of a list of names, but that hasn't been provided to those who are asking for who was actually deported. And there is a difference between someone who came into the country illegally versus someone who overstayed their visa, that's not a crime, versus someone who has no criminal record, no criminal history. Mm-hmm. And based on my reporting, based on clearly Priscilla's reporting, there are some Venezuelan nationals whose family members, whose lawyers say that they were deported who have no criminal record, who have no criminal history, that they legally applied for asylum or were trying to gain status, where some of them were in the middle of proceedings, and then they were deported.
Well, she says that overstaying your visa is not a crime. No, that's a problem. You can't overstay your visa. You come to the United States, you get a visa for a certain period of time, If you overstay that visa, that's a problem. That is in fact illegal. That let's not just wash past the fact here that you get a visa. Now, for United States citizens, this is something that we don't have to worry about. But if you are somebody that travels abroad, travels internationally, you have a certain amount of time that you can stay in most countries. You don't just get to overstay your visa for the hell of it because you want to. Because you think that, oh, I'd rather be here. That's not how the process, that's not how the system works. But when you've got 63% of the American public that is in favor of these deportations compared to only 35% that is against it, that's the number out of the Fox News poll. That's a pretty eye-opening statistic. That's a pretty eye-opening number. And so regardless of what the courts and how this thing plays out, these oral arguments that are going to be taking place in D.C. today, Trump presumably is going to continue down this path because it's something that's very popular. It's something that is resonating with the American people. Obviously, when you have 63% of the American public in favor of something, that is an overwhelming majority. For the most part, we are relatively split down the middle as a country. Now, I know the voter registration isn't exactly like that. There's a whole bunch of unaffiliated voters in a whole bunch of states like North Carolina. But for the most part, we'll call it close enough to 50-50 on a lot of issues. But then you have these issues that rise above that level. This is one of them. Something that is seen and deemed by the American people as a popular thing to do. The Trump administration is moving forward with that. They've got seemingly the backing of the American people. I believe they have the constitutional backing to do so. They seem to think the same thing as well. They're going to continue with it, irregardless of what the left wants to happen. Irregardless of all of the heartbreaking stories that this PBS NewsHour guest on CNN is talking about. Oh, we're hearing from people that their families are still in America. They did nothing wrong. They were in the process. It doesn't matter. This is something that's very popular with the American people. Trump ran his campaign on this and was overwhelmingly elected as the president of the United States, winning the 7 swing states and winning the popular vote, annihilating Kamala Harris and the Democrats in the general election. Plain and simple. There's no other way to sugarcoat it. There's no other way to tiptoe around the issue. That's a fact. Now, you can ignore the fact. You can pretend that it didn't happen. You can hope that it didn't happen, but it doesn't change the fact that it did. It doesn't change the fact that this administration ran on a message of dealing with illegal immigration, and the American people are behind that because they don't want individuals in the country illegally. They don't want dangerous members of Venezuelan street gangs roaming their city streets. They don't want these dangerous, hardened criminals in their backyard. And there's a lot of reasons why that's the case. It's very clear and obvious. Nobody wants their community, their city, their town, wherever they live, to be unsafe. They sure as hell don't want it to be unsafe because of people that the previous administration, that the Democrats led into the country while waving the green flag. Plain and simple. Democrats screwed themselves on the issue of illegal immigration. They decided they did not want to deal with it. Joe Biden ignored it for the better part of 2 years during his administration, and now it's coming back and biting the Democrats in the ass, as it should. This was a major failed policy choice by them. They thought that they would win over some popularity with this. They thought that if they brought out these stories that tug at your heart, they would win over the minds of the American people. Another situation where the Democrats were completely unsuccessful in winning over the support of the American people on an issue. We talked about the men and women's sports issue as well. Another one that they failed to convince the American people that their ideas were better. And this goes into an interesting clip. A couple of interesting clips I've got, and then we've got some local news this morning in regards to the Northside Food Co-op, a very interesting development there here in Wilmington. First, I want to take you to an episode of the Stephen A. Smith Show. This aired last week. This was part of Stephen A. Smith's show last week, and he was talking about this very issue, not the immigration issue, but the issue that the Democrats are currently facing in regards to the American voting population. I thought this was pretty interesting. Take a listen to this.
I got a story to tell the Democratic Party. Are you ready for this? Rather than telling us what we should vote against, maybe you should present us with options of what to vote for. Just a thought. I mean, my God, are you okay, Michael, with me suggesting that? Are you okay with me, Sherry, suggesting that? Rashawn, Galen, and all of the bunch of leftists that's under my umbrella trying to act like they're independents when they're full of it? I'm talking about my old damn staff. I can say it with love and affection because I don't mind. I'm a centrist. I think my man Rashawn is a centrist. The rest of these damn people working for me, I mean, what left-wing party are you associated with? I mean, you got to believe this stuff. You got to listen to it to hear it. I'm going to say it again. Rather than come to folks with what to vote against, how about telling us what we should vote for?
A very, very interesting comment there from Stephen A. Smith, calling out his own staff who, as he says, proclaim to be centrists, proclaim to be in the middle. They're just far-left radical lunatics. And his message is very clear. The Democrats don't have any policy issues. The Democrats don't have anything that they can run on. Their ideas are so unbelievably unpopular that there's nothing that they can support. And so what does the end result of this look like? They end up running all of their campaigns on what to vote against. Stephen A. Smith is spot on with this. They have nothing that for their voters to latch onto, to grasp as to why we should vote for the Democrat Party. This was Hillary Clinton's mistake in 2016. She didn't run a campaign. Her entire 2016 campaign was Donald Trump is a racist. Donald Trump is a bigot. He's a xenophobe. He's a misogynist. He's all of these things, but provided nothing as to who she is. Provided nothing as to what she and her party were standing for. And it's what led Trump to a victory in his first administration as the 45th president. It's what garnered him a successful election night in November of 2016. Because there are no ideas. And the ideas that the Democrats do have, like unfettered illegal immigration, like allowing men to play in women's sports, those ideas are so unbelievably unpopular that they turn off a vast majority of the voting population. So I think Stephen A. Smith's comments there are absolutely spot on. And this is a major problem that the Democrat Party is facing right now. This is a major issue that this party has to deal with. And I don't think they have the ideas. They are in a civil war right now within their own party. There is a major, I don't even know if it's a power grab, but there are major disagreements ongoing in that party as we speak this morning as to who is going to lead the narrative, who is going to lead the agenda going forward. You know, somebody like Gavin Newsom, who is doing this new podcast where he's talking to people like Steve Bannon, Charlie Kirk, bringing those individuals on to talk about the political landscape, to talk about what's going on politically, is a fascinating exercise. I think Gavin Newsom is teeing himself up perfectly to have a successful presidential run in 2028. Because he's actually listening and inviting the other side on. And if you've seen some of the clips I have, I've listened to a couple of the episodes, he's agreeing with some of the things that are being said. The fact that Gavin Newsom, Charlie Kirk, and Steve Bannon have anything in common is remarkable. Gavin Newsom is as far left as they come. But even he seems to be waking up, smelling the coffee a little bit, and understanding that his party does not have any good ideas. That his party has lost the narrative on a vast majority of their important policy issues. And then this piggybacks well with another clip from this weekend. Real Time with Bill Maher. Not a big Bill Maher fan. Just haven't been. Nothing. I don't like his show. It's nothing to do with politics or anything like that. I'm not a fan of his show. He did a show this weekend. He had an author on talking about the Democrat Party, and he was going in on them as well. Take a listen to this. It's a little bit longer of a clip. It's about 5 minutes. I'll jump in from time to time, but listen to this exchange back and forth between Bill Maher and his panelists this weekend.
California is projected to lose 3 seats, New York 2, also going to lose a seat, Minnesota, Oregon, Rhode Island, Illinois, all blue states. Who's getting these? Texas, Florida, Idaho, and Utah. I mean, this looks like game over. You know, and the reason why people are voting with their feet is a lot of what your book is about.
Yeah.
Taxes and regulation. I certainly have been screaming about it forever. I did 3 years with a sign here that said, how long is it going to take me to get my solar hooked up? 3 years. Talking about it on television in this state. You couldn't do it. This state has almost 400,000 regulations.
By the way, he lives in California. He's talking about the regulations, the out-of-control regulatory environment in California.
I just put in a new roof because the fire, I thought, oh, let's get a roof that's not going to burn up. 2 inspections. Why are you inspecting my roof? It's my fucking roof. If it falls on me, that's my problem. And we're taxed more than any other state. People are leaving these kind of states for places where they're not, they feel the heavy breath of government on them. It's just, it's not that hard for Democrats to understand this, but they seem to be incapable of doing anything about it.
And that's exactly the case. I mean, Bill Maher, who is not a Republican, I would argue is not a conservative by any stretch of the imagination, is pointing out exactly the problem that his party faces right now, that the Democrat Party faces. They are just incapable of looking at the situations that they have created. In this case, he's talking about overburdensome regulation within the government, and not understanding why that is so unpopular for the American people. And even though he says, you know, it took me 3 years to get solar hooked up and installed at my house, Bill Maher is a national political figure. Bill Maher is not an unknown random Joe Schmo. He hosts a very successful weekly talk show on HBO, and he can't even get it done. This is the overburdensome regulation, as he notes, that is driving people out of places like California and New York and into states where the government isn't constantly breathing down your freaking neck. And as he pointed out at the beginning of the clip, these blue states are losing congressional districts because their population is going down. That's how you calculate the amount of representation you have in Washington, D.C. It's based on your population. North Carolina gained a new congressional seat, was it 2 years ago? Now we have 14. States like Texas, Florida, Idaho, and Utah are gaining more seats. Those are going to be seats that are going to be Republicans. As he said, it's game over for the Democrats. Let's listen to some more of the back and forth between him and his panelists.
So we poll this. They're leaving on cost of living. That's all part of it. They're leaving because they can't afford homes.
And it's a huge, not just political problem, those numbers you just gave. After 2030, if that holds, a Democrat could win every state Kamala Harris won, win Michigan, win Pennsylvania, and I'm just blanking on the third blue wall state, win Michigan, win Pennsylvania, and win Wisconsin, and lose the presidential election, right? The blue wall would no longer be enough for them to win. And you have to take that.
You mean they could win those three states and still
lose? Lose the presidential. Oh. That's how bad it is, right? Wow. And that's because they are driving people out, working class families out of the states they govern because the cost of living is too high. And the cost of living is too high in part for regulatory reasons, in part for taxes. But the big problem is they just don't have enough of the things people need. Not enough homes, not enough energy, not a government capable of delivering. And they've been treating that as not a real problem. You were talking about your solar sign. California high-speed rail, it's a huge disaster, but nobody's ever done anything about it. If you tried to build it again, it would go the exact same way.
High-speed rail?
Yeah, California's high-speed rail.
I think we first passed it in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just voted about something about it again. It's projected. Just give up. Just to build, I think, from Bakersfield to Merced. Who the hell wants to go from Bakersfield to Merced?
Look,
couldn't do that.
I went out and toured this for the book. And the people building it were perfectly clear with me. Look, this doesn't work if we don't do L.A. to San Francisco. And they don't have the money to do L.A. to San Francisco. And they don't have the regulatory structure to do it. They have been clearing. They started clearing the rail track through environmental review. The whole point of high-speed rail is it's good for the environment.
Right.
They started clearing it through environmental review in 2012. By the end of 2024, when I was fact-checking the book, it was almost done. The reviews were almost done.
Yeah.
And the thing that bothers me about it, in addition to we didn't get high-speed rail, is they didn't change it, right? Okay, huge failure. Learn something. Make it so it won't happen again. The problem is the right, we've just been talking about this, the personality type of the right is autocratic now. And the personality type of the left is bureaucratic. And you can't govern if you are this obsessed with process. And you can see it in the outcomes. If you want to sideline dangerous populist right autocratic movements, you got to offer people the fruits of effective government. If the places you govern are not advertisements for your governance, you are going to lose.
I'm going to stop him right there. That is exactly true. That is exactly the case. If you, as Democrat politicians, Gavin Newsom, another example of this, if your state is not the shining example of the policies that you want to bring forward, this is why I'm such a big fan of somebody like Ron DeSantis. Now, let me be clear, I didn't vote for DeSantis in the primary, voted for Trump, but somebody like Ron DeSantis, to me, is the perfect example of that on the right. His state, what he has done in the state of Florida, is a national example. The fruits of his labor and the Florida legislature's labor in that state is something that you would want copied in other places. The left can't say that. The states that they run, the states that they have exclusive control over, California, New York, Illinois, Maine, Rhode Island, I mean, all of these states that they have exclusive control over, nobody wants to live there. Nobody wants to live in New York. Nobody wants to live in California. It's too damn expensive. It's too unsafe. As he was just saying, it took them a decade to clear the regulation hurdle to put freaking train tracks in the ground. That's your example. That is what you are projecting to the American people. That is your track record that you are projecting to the voting population. And if that's a track record that is not good, if that is a track record that is driving people away from your states, as it is in California, as it is in New York, well, then you're doomed. You're completely doomed. There's nothing else that you can do. I love the phrasing of that from this author. If you can't keep people in your own state, if you are essentially forcing them and boxing them out of your state, how is that going to play out on a national level? Just a minute or so left on this clip from Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO this weekend.
Yeah.
And it's just depressing to live in a country where it still takes nearly 3 hours to get from Washington to New York. This is the great avenue, right? You can't get there in less than 3 hours. It should be 40 minutes on a real train. I couldn't agree with you more, but what I want to know is, why is that any different than what they're doing in the red states?
So,
deregulate, lots of energy, lots of building.
In part, there are places where red states have it right. Look, Houston and Austin, when people move there, they build more houses. They just do. They build multiples more houses per, you know, 1,000 people who come in there than L.A. and San Francisco and New York City do. L.A. and San Francisco and New York City should take a page out of Texas's book on this. The problem with a bunch of the red states is the vision of where they want to go with things, right? The fascinating thing to me about Texas is it's building as much clean energy as it is, even though the politics are anti-clean energy. The Texas governor, the Texas legislature, they keep putting up bills to make it harder, but because the default in Texas is it's easy to build, and building clean energy is profitable because of the Inflation Reduction Act and the technology and a bunch of other things, they're still building a ton of it.
So, I mean, just, I think a really good back and forth conversation there. A really clear, concise, and you just heard from that author, this guy's not a crazy right-wing radical or anything of that nature, but a really, really good discussion. And something that if I were a Democrat or if I was high up in the Democrat Party, this is the stuff I'd be trying to, this is the stuff I'd be watching. This would be the stuff I'd be looking at. Try and figure out what to do to get some of this stuff cleared up. What to do to get some of this stuff cleared away. Yeah, the clip started off that with Bill Maher saying it might be game over for the Democrats. I think his synopsis on that is pretty spot on. It might be. They've got just a couple years to really kind of switch this message around, to clear this stuff up. Or if not, it is going to be another couple of rough election cycles for the left. And eventually it will happen. Eventually the switch will flip. Eventually they will come to the realization that these ridiculous policies that they roll out in their blue states like California are not successful and not popular. And that it's turning people off. It's pushing people away from their party. Really, really good analysis there and back and forth conversation. I'll have the links to that over on our show notes if you are interested in getting those daily show notes, plus exclusive content, including our monthly Zoom call, which will be taking place later this week. That will be coming in an email to our Patreon members later today. Head on over to patreon.com/Nick Cray. You get access to those daily show notes and our monthly chat, which will be coming up Thursday night. Make sure you are subscribed to Patreon for that. Again, patreon.com/Nick Craig. If you believe you're getting some value out of the show, I appreciate your support and coming alongside on this venture. On the other side this morning, we have got an update on the Northside Food Co-op. If you've been a longtime listener of me, you're very familiar with this plan for a grocery store in downtown Wilmington. It is on hold once again. We'll have the details coming up here in just a few minutes. Streaming live this morning on Rumble and X, thanks to Elon Musk and his Starlink service, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. The Nick Craig Show, back here in just a few minutes. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on a Monday morning on Rumble and X, thanks to Elon Musk and Starlink, a major internet outage continuing for AT&T customers in the northern half of New Hanover County. Glad to be back live this morning, thanks to his amazing, unbelievable service. We turn our attention this morning to the Northside Food Co-op. This project and this plan, something that if you were a listener to the radio show, we talked about from time to time, it was the idea that government was going to be involved in a grocery store in downtown Wilmington. Part of downtown Wilmington has been deemed and is put under the category of a food desert. And because of that, the government thought that it would be a good idea to invest tens of millions of dollars worth of your taxpayer dollars into a grocery store. Now, we know that private business is more than capable of running grocery stores, right? You drive through Wilmington, there are Food Lions, Lowe's Foods, Publix, Walmarts, Harris Teeters, they're all over the freaking place. However, there isn't one in downtown Wilmington. And there's probably a good reason for that. These grocery stores who are, you know, pop up hundreds, if not thousands of these stores all over the country, they know what needs to be done and what the environment needs to look like to have a successful grocery store. Right? These companies operate in the free market. These companies know what kind of environment needs to exist to have a profitable location, right? Because they have to profit. If a store doesn't profit, if a store is not generating revenue for the company, it doesn't make sense to operate. It's a pretty clear thing there. There's not a lot of ambiguity. However, for whatever reason, both the city and the county together think it's a great idea for them to invest in a grocery store in Wilmington. Them. The government to be involved in that process, which is absurd. Well, there was a budget workshop that took place on Thursday in New Hanover County, and there was some discussion about the Northside Food Co-op. First, we'll hear from the county commission chairman, Bill Rivenbark, and then some back and forth between some of the other commissioners about the Northside Food Co-op. Take a listen to this.
The Northside Co-op, that's on hold. Is that not correct?
So that, correct. Yes, sir. But that's a capital commitment that the board had already made. So it's in the capital fund. But to your point, the co-op has stepped back and reevaluated what it wants to do in the marketplace, recognizing that another grocery is likely to come downtown.
Right.
So you've got this situation where there is another grocer, I don't know the proper term to use for that, that is potentially coming to downtown Wilmington. Makes sense. There's been grocery stores downtown before. There is a need there. There is a situation for a private business to come in and make some money. And so that is exactly what is happening. You've got a grocer, it's apparently Publix, that is looking at opening a store in downtown Wilmington. Here's some more of the discussion during the meeting on Thursday. Take a listen.
Status on the grocery store that's supposed to come to Chestnut and 3rd Street?
So I know enough to be dangerous. My understanding is whether or not a partnership agreement with the grocer can be reached will happen later this summer. There is a contract on the property.
Yeah.
It's under contract with the city, and the condition is to construct a grocery store there.
Mm-hmm.
I think to know whether or not there's a signed agreement between the developer and a flag brand is still some months away.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree then with the Northside Co-op. That's a good decision on their part. To let's see how this plays out before they move forward, because we want to set it up for success,
whatever
looks like, and it might be a different model.
And that is a decision that the co-op made, that they came to us and said, and I know we've shared that with you, that they want to pause and determine what is the right business model and the right set of support services in that community, knowing that it is a possibility that another grocery will enter the marketplace.
Remarkable. There's been so much money that has been dumped into this Northside Food Co-op, and now all of a sudden it's being paused once again. Looking at the current capital projects for the county, New Hanover County. I want to show you this graphic. These are some of the current capital things that are going on within the county. This is from the budget workshop that took place on Thursday. These are previously authorized funds, monies that have already been spent. Take a look at this. The Northside Food Co-op has already been authorized at over $9.5 million. $9.5 million New Hanover County has already spent on the Northside Food Co-op that is now paused. Unbelievable. $9.5 million already authorized out of the county for a grocery store. Why the county was ever involved in this, I will never be able to wrap my head around. Why government thought that it was prudent for them to be involved in something that is solely the responsibility of the free market is absurd. A grocery store? A taxpayer-funded grocery store? What the hell are we doing? I mean, this is absurd. And this has caused a whole bunch of issues between the county and the city, right? The city, it was city land that was given over to Northside Food Co-op. The county invested almost $10 million into the project. Then the county got all pissed off that they spent all the money and the city could have taken the land back with their $9.5 million worth of investment. It's created a disaster here. There's zero reason that this situation should have unfolded. The government should have never been in this position. The co-op formed all the way back in 2020. It's been going on for 5 years now, with the idea of bringing a grocery store to downtown Wilmington for the first time in 35 years. And is there an issue that there's not a grocery store downtown? Sure. For the people that live down there, yeah, I'm sure it's a huge pain. And I'm sure it's a huge hassle. But that's not where government comes in to solve the problem. That's not where government needs to go, oh, we've got the magic bullet here. We'll just expend taxpayer dollars to build a grocery store, which is exactly what they were doing. They would have, now it's currently on pause right now. But with everything going on, I can tell you how the Northside Food Co-op would have ended. The county would have expended all of this money to get it open and operational, all of the land, running the utilities to it, building the building. This is all the things that the county was going to be involved in. And then the co-op was going to run it itself. The co-op was going to self-sustain. That was the plan. I've seen this before. It may have been self-sustaining for a couple of years, 1, 2, 3 years, something like that. But then what happens after the third year when it's no longer self-sustaining? Well, the county's already in for like $10 million on it. The New Hanover County Endowment gave them a $7 million grant. So all of these stakeholders are already in the hole for millions upon millions of dollars. So what would have happened? Well, then the county would have said, well, we've already invested all this money into the co-op. We're not just going to let it shut down. We're just going to start funding it. And then you've got a county that is involved in the operations of a grocery store. You'd have New Hanover County operating a grocery store. If that is not the biggest example of government being out of reach and way overstepping its bounds, I don't know what else is. There is zero reason, zero justification for a county, especially one like New Hanover, to be involved in a grocery store. It's just zero. You can't tell me otherwise. Is there a food desert downtown? Yes, I believe that comes from the FDA, I think, does the food desert thing. And the technical definition of a food desert is an area where 33% of the population lives more than 1 mile from a grocery store, with the largest and most close to grocery stores being a Food Lion on Oleander Drive, which is more than 2 miles away from Northside. So it's about 2 miles away. So that makes it a technical definition of a food desert. And that sucks. I'm sure it sucks that there's not a grocery store right in downtown Wilmington. But why don't we look at the issues with why there's not a grocery store in downtown Wilmington? Why has a private business not opened a grocery store? Now, there's discussions that there's a Publix that could be coming to Chestnut Street. But up until now, why was there no discussion of that? I think there's a variety of reasons for it. But instead of solving the problem head on, instead of asking ourselves as the county asking themselves or the city asking themselves, why is there a food desert here? What kind of environmental conditions exist in this area that is not sufficient to sustain a private business, to sustain a private grocery store with individuals that are experts in opening these things? Why have they not moved to this food desert if it exists? I think safety is a huge reason for it. I think crime and safety is probably one of the biggest. That the area in which these this entity would be opening would not necessarily be the safest for the store and its employees. I think crime is a huge part of that discussion. But instead of dealing with that, the county and the city thought, let's just get involved in a grocery store. Let's start signing blank checks to open a grocery store in downtown Wilmington. If Publix, who is in the works right now, apparently, to open something on Chestnut Street, I don't know if it's going to be a full Publix store or maybe one of their smaller neighborhood markets or something like that. Not exactly sure. We should know more this summer. But it sucks that if this comes forward, that the county, presumably the Northside Food Co-op will disband if Publix opens, because it will completely wipe away their use case. That the county and the city have already invested millions upon millions of dollars into this program and this project with nothing tangible to do with. Right, there is no grocery store currently. Even if Publix wasn't moving, there still is no substantial plan that I've seen as of late to actually open this thing up. Government needs to do a better job of staying in its lane. And I understand government wanting to help. I get that. I understand the want to have a grocery store in downtown Wilmington. Sure. But at the same time, government needs to stay in its lane. Government needs to do a better job of focusing on core services and get out of this nonsense. And that's what this is. There is no obligation, and from my book, no justification for government to have ever been involved in this. If the area of downtown Wilmington needs a grocery store, then the community as a whole can rally behind it, either via a private business like a Publix, or local groups that want to spend their dollars that they raise to fund something like the Northside Food Co-op. That's it. It should not be the government's problem. This should not be something that you and my taxpayer dollars are being expended towards. There's just no justification for it at all. So, project on hold right now. Over the next couple of months, we should learn about potentially a Publix opening in and around Chestnut Street. We'll keep an eye on those details and pass them along to you here on the Nick Craig Show. And of course, budget conversations continuing. We'll look forward to having those continued discussions with our local elected officials in the coming weeks as this process continues to take place. I'll remind you that the new fiscal year budget is July 1. That's when new budgets are set to go into effect July 1st across the state. That includes the city of Wilmington, your local beach towns, as well as New Hanover County, and even the state government up at the General Assembly with their budget. All of that, the deadline to get all of that in place is July 1. Some major discussions in New Hanover County, of course, with property reevaluation, tax rates, all of the things going on there. We'll keep a very, very close eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, once again, a huge thanks this morning to Elon Musk and Starlink for being able to provide internet service to do the show this morning. Greatly appreciate his amazing capitalist venture known as SpaceX and Starlink. And thanks to you for joining us this morning. We are back tomorrow morning here on the Nick Craig Show. Don't forget, you can listen 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Monday.